We are often told that the way to the understanding of vocal music is through the words. I suggest that you question that viewpoint. There is some music in which the words are of extreme importance. There is much music in which the words and music seem to be of equal importance. But in most vocal music, it's the music that dominates the words. One readily available proof of this is the fact that you are able to enjoy so many songs, operas, and choral works, even when they're sung in a foreign language or when they're sung in unintelligible English. Here I'm going to make three statements about the relationship between words and music. One, there is no music in existence that can by itself convey a verbal thought. Two, there is no music in existence that can do anything but hinder to some degree the comprehensibility of any words that may be set to it. And three, the greater the music as music, the more incomprehensible the words are likely to be. Proof of each of these three statements will follow. One proof of music's inability to convey the verbal content of words is contained in the fact that much vocal music was originally written to accommodate different words from those with which it ultimately became associated. Take, for example, Handel's Messiah, a religious work. Here's the chorus starting with the words, "For unto us a child is born." Handel originally wrote this music for a completely different set of words, as a secular love duet, in Italian, whose text reads, "No, I no longer wish to trust you, blind love, cruel beauty."
No, di voi non vo fidarmi, cieco amor, crudel beltà, cieco amor, crudel beltà.
The literature abounds in such examples, in which the same vocal music does just as well for two or more sets of words, because music, by its very nature, is incapable of conveying any verbal ideas. Thus, the statement often advanced that vocal music is a translation into sound of the words must be questioned. If music could express the meaning of words, it would never be necessary to supply translations when works are sung in a foreign language. Now, point two. Why have I maintained that music must hinder the intelligibility of words? Well, take a familiar song like the Star-Spangled Banner. Notice the rhythms of the words when they're spoken naturally. Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming? But now, consider what the musical setting does to the words. First, because the notes last longer than the individual syllables do when the words are spoken, the tempo or speed is made much slower. Then the meter of the music, being a regular 1-2-3, 1-2-3, superimposes itself upon the natural rhythms of the spoken words and alters them. The phrase, "at the twilight's last gleaming," becomes "twilight's last gleaming," with its unnatural accents. Then, since singing requires extending the vowels for the sake of sustained vocal tone, another distortion of the natural word rhythm is introduced. The very first sound, the letter O, becomes extended into O. The word C becomes C. Proudly becomes proudly.
Oh, say, by the dawn's early light, what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming.
So we see that when words are set to music, the music imposes demands that make the words less intelligible than they would be if they were merely spoken. This, of course, was a very simple case. But as music becomes more complex, you can see why it's so often so difficult to understand the words in vocal music. And yet, as I said earlier, we can still enjoy vocal music even when, as is the case most of the time, we can't understand the words. Why do we enjoy the music? The reason is that the music supplies its own interest, its own melodies, rhythms, harmonies, its own beauties. Moreover, as the music becomes more complex, that is, more interesting in its own musical ways, the importance of the words diminishes. And conversely, where the words are extremely dramatic, or where they relate an important incident in a narrative, the purely musical interest diminishes, and the music itself recedes into the background and merely supports the words. Here's an example of that, Schubert's very dramatic song, The Erlking, whose text concerns a father riding through the night with his sick child in his arms. At the end of this exciting song, the words are, "In his arms the child was dead." Notice that at that point, the fast-moving piano accompaniment comes to a halt, and the singer intones those words only once. The piano supplies only punctuating chords that support the words, "In seinen Armen das Kind war tot."
Seinen Armen das Kind war tot.
There, the words were of prime importance. But as I mentioned, the more interesting and the more complex the music becomes as music, the more it commands the tension, making the words subordinate. The chorus Cum Sancto Spiritu in Bach's B minor Mass is an example. The words are first heard in the tenors, who are later joined by the altos, the first sopranos, the second sopranos, and finally the basses, all singing the same set of words, and all with essentially the same melody. But the musical form demands that they enter one after the other instead of together, just as in the case of the round Three Blind Mice. With the successive entrance of each of the five vocal parts, the music becomes more interesting. But because of this increasing complexity of the music, the words of necessity become less intelligible. What we have in this example is essentially abstract instrumental music, in which the voices are treated as instruments, with the words mainly acting as a vehicle for the vocal sounds. Thus my third point, that as the musical interest increases, the importance of the words decreases. Much vocal music, while it may not be quite as complex as the example you just heard, is really abstract music, in which the interest is centered upon the music, with the words being subordinate. That's why we can enjoy it without being able to understand the words. Notice that the setting of words to music is most often characterized by two things. One, simultaneity. That is, the same set of words accompanying itself in two or more voices at the same time, but starting at different times, so that the result is considerable verbal confusion. Sometimes there are even two or more sets of words going on at the same time. And second, repetition of words. Take one of the tenor solos in Handel's Messiah. The words are, "Every valley shall be exalted." But notice that when Handel sets those words to music, there's a good deal of repetition of the words.
Every valley. Be gone.
Both these characteristics, simultaneity and repetition, while they suit the needs of music, are actually anti-verbal. In short, they play havoc with the words. Because of this, when a composer sets to music words that tell a story, he simplifies the texture of the music, as Schubert did at the end of his song, in order that the text might be heard most clearly. Another technique employed by composers when they're setting words that just tell a story or convey information is the one known as recitative. Here's Mozart using recitative. Notice that the accompaniment is just a piano playing occasional chords. The words are sung at a speed that more closely approximates the natural speed of speech than they would be if they were set to more complex music. The words do, therefore, emerge clearly, but the music itself is much less interesting. It's merely an extension of speech, punctuated by an occasional chord in the piano.
So therefore, you give the count a hint that late this evening you'll meet him in the garden. And little Cherubino, on my advice, is not yet departed. Dressed up as a woman, we'll keep a rendezvous in place of Susanna. That's the only solution whereby his lordship, surprised by my lady, can be forced to accede to all her dictates.
We're often told that in vocal music, the music symbolizes the meaning of the text. This is another concept that should not be accepted without question. For example, in Bach's Mass in B minor, while the chorus sings the words Credo in unum Deum, I believe in one God, the cellos and double basses in the orchestra play a series of loud, evenly spaced notes as accompaniment. These notes are said to represent the steadfastness of Bach's religious beliefs. Loud, evenly spaced notes occur in works of all kinds, secular as well as sacred. They're used by composers who have no religious beliefs. Therefore, while we do know that Bach was a religious man, the fact that he wrote those loud, evenly spaced notes does not by itself prove that he was religious. The symbolism is arbitrarily applied from without and is not inherent in the music itself. If it were, then how could we account for another portion of the same work containing the words visibilium et invisibilium, all things visible and invisible? How can the concept of all things invisible be conveyed by this loud, exciting music? Now, let's see what a composer actually does when he writes vocal music, opera, or song, or oratorio. Needless to say, he seeks out the feeling tone of the words and tries to capture that feeling in his music. That is, a happy or light-hearted text will be set to light, fast, extroverted music, while a somber text will be set to slower music. In other words, he matches the mood of the music to the mood of the words. But that's actually as far as he can go, since, as we've seen, music cannot convey the literal verbal content of words. It's this limitation of music that allows a composer to set several verses of a poem to the same music, provided that all the verses have approximately the same emotional feeling. But it also accounts for the fact that once the emotional tone has been established, the music can make no distinction among texts having to do with differing subject matter. For example, here are the beginnings of two songs by Schubert. The subject matter of the texts are quite different from one another, but both are in a quiet or somber mood. Here's the first song, with the vocal melody sung not to words, but hummed. Now here's the beginning of another Schubert song performed in the same manner. Note that the mood is similar, even though the musical material, that is, the chords and the vocal melody, are different. Songs has to do with the sea, and the text of the other concerns a completely different subject, a double or an apparition. The song having to do with the sea has been described as the greatest of all songs about the sea. But isn't it apparent that this cannot be the case if we're referring to the music alone, since unless you were familiar with these songs in advance, it's impossible from the music alone even to tell which song was about the sea and which was about the double, two completely different subjects. Now, for a complete understanding of any song or opera as a musico-dramatic entity, it is advisable to know in advance what the text is about, especially if the work is sung in a foreign language. And most certainly, the performer must be familiar with every aspect of the text in order that he might bring out its emotional implications. But once you, the listener, have become familiar with the text, I suggest that you devote subsequent hearings to the music itself so that you might enjoy its beauties. For example, the song about the double opens with a succession of four chords that are repeated several times during the course of the work. At the end of the song, Schubert repeats those chords, but he changes the fourth chord so that instead of this, which we've become accustomed to because of its many appearances during the work, we have this. That succession of chords takes place independently of the text. It's a purely musical phenomenon with its own emotional effect. If every time we hear the song, we lose ourselves in thoughts about the text, we may deny ourselves the pleasures to be had from some of the purely musical beauties, such as this one. The final movement of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony is customarily said to be about joy and the brotherhood of man. Actually, that's what the text is about. But the music is about this melody. And about this melody. The music is a gigantic set of variations on both of those melodies, whose only connection with the words is that it tries to capture the mood of the words. So intent is Beethoven upon exploring the purely musical possibilities in his materials that at one point he combines both themes, presenting them at the same time, even though they are associated with two different sets of words. Because of the demands of the music, the words go along willy-nilly. There is the key to the understanding of that work, as it is in the case of much vocal music. Once you have familiarized yourself with the text, look to the music rather than to the words.